Welcome to the Trail Runners Experience podcast, episode number 85. I'm your host, Daniel Ferrugia, founder and head coach of Distance Runners Unlimited. I'm excited to bring you another inspiring guest today. Joining us on the show is Lara Hamilton, an Australian distance runner, producer, vocalist. Well, actually, she's a trained and highly accomplished opera singer, digital growth hacker, and member of the Australian mountain running team, soon to compete at the World Mountain and Trail Running Championships in Austria in June 2023. Lara grew up in Australia, where she trained as a Nordic and cross-country skier and cross-country and track runner. And while she loved the speed of track running, trail running felt more natural to her, and she's been hooked ever since. Lara lives, works, and trains in the United States of America. She was part of the Boise State University track cross-country team from 2019 to 2021. But her focus now lies in trail-based sports, where she excels. Lara's move to Colorado has been a game changer, as she's been able to explore the incredible trails and diverse mountain landscapes of the state while gaining a great deal of exposure to high altitude training and a highly competitive trail running community. Lara is here to share her lessons, learnings, and experiences with us today. So let's get into it. Through the state, they got to race there again. And so we had like the home ground advantage. So it was pretty cool. And where are you originally from?
I am from Sydney. So nothing super interesting, but...
Sydney's a good place. Yeah. So, but it's the best, a good pool of runners out of Sydney because it's such a big city. And so where did you, you started running cross country, obviously. Where did you get your running bug from?
I actually started off as a Nordic skier, and we would run around kind of Perisher and Jindabyne with poles, kind of to mimic, the arm movement growing up as cross training, and then they would give us a program to do at home, and it was pretty basic. It wasn't until 12th grade where they needed some extra people to run the school cross country. So I did the IGSA, which is the girls' schools cross country, and I just ran it as hard as I could. I came fourth, which I think put you through to the whatever the next round was, and kept climbing the ranks there. And I was like, oh, I can run. Then my mom, we were driving home one night from the snow. We spent a lot of time up at Perisher training. My parents like to do different kinds of skiing, and I would go there and train with the squad. We saw them setting up Sydney Harbour 5K, 10K, that road race down there.
Yeah.
And she was like, you should enter that. This was a Saturday night and the race was the next morning. So the next morning I rock up and I won the 5K, which is not, it wasn't super deep field or anything, but so still the only time I've ever actually torn a ribbon, which is kind of funny. Because they don't really do that much anymore. But I was like, that was a pretty nice moment for me as I think I would have been 17 at the time to tear that ribbon and be like, whoa, I can run. So I thought, okay, I'm going to get a coach. Graduated high school, got a running coach, Gary Howard, and ran with Run Crew. And yeah, that's how it all started.
That's so cool. And when you said about the 5K, and I've said it many times, you've got to be in it to win it. And every, if you turn up on the day, you got to claim that win. A win is a win. You know what I mean? And it's a nice feeling. Yeah. Breaking. I've won a few races, but I've never broke. I would love to have broken the actual tape, that's pretty cool. They broke the ribbon. So yeah. And then, so you're with Run Crew. So tell us more about Run Crew. And you've got a different coach now, haven't you? So
no, I'm actually still with them. Programs, he does remote programming, and I just follow that. I've been with Run Crew since 2016, so it's been a really long relationship there. And I just, other than the couple of years I spent running with Boise State in the NCAA, they've always been there for me. And I've had a lot of success under their program. So I have kept that going. And it provides me with guidance. I think it's really tough training, doing most of my training here on my own. But it's made me mentally tougher. And, you know, at least I have like foundations, you know, the long run, the intervals, the threshold runs, the easy runs. I know what to do every day.
Yeah, it helps. And I think structure is, it releases people from the pressure of knowing what to do next, you know, and just having that structure, and it helps you become very consistent, doesn't it? Yeah. So and so now you've found yourself, you're coming to me live from Colorado. And mm-hmm. So how did you end up, and you're out there, you're at good altitude. How did you end up there?
Yeah, so I'll start it back when I started at Boise State, and I ran there for 2 years, and that was the whole NCAA deal with the track and cross country, although that was kind of ruined with COVID. I got one cross country season, and it was quarantines and all of that, just navigating. Yes. Graduated May 2021. I started to trail run a lot more during COVID. I just found a lot more peace. I got stuck in the US, you know, they shut the Australian borders. There was a lot of struggle there, and I found a lot of peace running on trails and kind of doing mountain incentives. And so I kept that going, and I moved back to Australia because, you know, your visa ends and you have to come back. And I don't know, I found a lot of independence and established a real life over in the US and in the mountain community. I got invited on the Salomon Running Academy in Moab in 2021. And I was like, oh, they see some potential in me. You know, it had been so tough, not knowing what was wrong with me at that time, with ankylosing spondylitis being undiagnosed, going through quarantines. And I thought, okay, there's something here in the US for me. Went home, kind of felt the same thing. We were put in lockdowns basically all of that 2021 until the end of the year. Applied for like 100 jobs on LinkedIn until someone would agree to go through a visa process with me at no cost to them. Like, I covered all the costs, but I was like, okay, great. I got a job, moved back to Boise, stayed there, trained there for a little while. But on the Salomon camp back in 2021, like I met a guy. We're still together, so he lives here in Gunnison, Colorado. We cool. moved in with each other, and he's completing his degree here. Also a very good runner. And so I ended up here in Colorado, and we're at just under 2,400 meters is like where my house is at. And so I do most of my training at this level or higher. They say 7,000 feet is between that 7,000 feet, 8,000 feet is the sweet spot where it's not impacting your recovery so much. Like, you go super high, you're going to potentially see some recovery detriments, you know.
Yeah, it's I've never been in, this is pretty funny, I mean obviously I've been in airplanes, but I've never been on foot in the mountains higher than 2,000 meters. So you live higher than I've ever been. It's amazing. That's a pretty wild story, and I imagine COVID going back, like, it interrupted a lot of people's ability to, well, just get on with life, obviously, but particularly in a sport like running, where, you know, so many meets were cancelled and things like that. Obviously, that has a huge psychological impact as well. Do you feel that was that a difficult time for you?
I still look back on, I guess, probably from late 2020 through to mid to late 2021, and I don't even like revisiting that. It was just so low for me. You know, I had this autoimmune condition that I didn't know about at the time, but something that exacerbates it and it brings it out, you normally get diagnosed in your early to mid 20s. If you're lucky, it's hard to kind of figure it out. You need blood tests, MRIs, see a rheumatologist. I just felt so out of body. I became really swollen and puffy, which makes sense because it's an inflammatory condition. I just couldn't run without feeling pain. I didn't get to do, like, I did my master's and I was training to be a professional opera singer, and my final recital was in front of no audience with a mask on. Like, I kind of felt at that time robbed of something that I worked for, you know, 6 years on. And it was, I think I, it just, took a toll on me. And you get back to Australia and like, what job am I going to work? There's no performing jobs. Even now it's hard. So luckily I worked part-time in marketing since basically high school and was able to acquire a job in that field. You know, and these jobs, they make ends meet, might not be the most passionate thing, but yeah, like I found it hard in all aspects of life, and I had no family to go through it with. And in a way, it made me a lot tougher, but
yeah,
it took a toll.
I can imagine. And, you know, as it's obviously, it was a case for a lot of people, but being stuck so far from home as well. And, but I'm still sort of reeling. I knew you were a vocalist, but I didn't know you were training to be an opera singer. And that's wild. What a diversity of interest that you have. So, you know, elite mountain runner and skier and elite singer. How do you marry the two? Or do you marry the two?
Well, that's interesting. So yeah. I did my final research paper for my degree, the master's, on the vocalist and exercise science. Like, how can you become a better singer? I kind of delved into the other instruments as well, like a violinist who has to hold their body in a good position and play the violin for hours, for example. How can we use sport and exercise prescription to make you a better performer? Because I used to get told, like, I think the first thing that was said to me when I walked into the meet and greet day before I started my undergrad was, "You don't look like an opera singer," by one of the heads of department there. And that intimidated me because I was like, oh, why does what I look like determine whether I'm going to be a good opera singer? And you know, people can put two and two together, but it's not like that. It's how efficiently can you use your diaphragm? Like, how efficiently is your diaphragm move when you're breathing? How much air can you intake and use that air properly to produce a really good quality, healthy sound? And sport plays a role in that. Like, I've been told to do less sport during that degree. I wasn't going to do that. I was going to find ways, hey, when I'm in the gym doing strength training, I'm going to do strength training that helps my running and my singing. And, you know, watch me put together a program that does that. And, you know, I was able to graduate, top of the class, and that I put that down to making my exercise regimen complement my singing and my singing complement my exercise regimen. And I one day hope to be able to pursue some further research in that, because I think the music world and sport world, as niches they are to do them together, they have a lot of similarities.
Absolutely. That is amazing. And it stands to reason. I mean, you've got an enormous aerobic engine, and singing is, you know, you've got to breathe. In the simplest terms, it would seem that having a great, big, enormous set of lungs is going to be helpful for singing and also for running, obviously. So that's pretty cool. So you need to market yourself differently as the running opera singer, perhaps.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I used to have the joke where I was like, it will probably never happen. I don't think it's in my sights anymore. But at one point when I was younger, you know, I had the dream that so many of us do, is to, you know, run in the Olympics. And I was like, I want to be that person that sings the national anthem, performs it, and then goes and runs my event. that would be so cool.
That would be not too dissimilar to what Kathy Freeman experienced at 2000, where she got to light the torch at the opening ceremony, and then she goes on to win gold in the 400. You know, that's the dream right there. And that, so seeing the national anthem is just another version of that, I reckon. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I mean, you're still young, and there's obviously still growth in you running wise. And so this upcoming year, like, you must be excited about, because you've got quite a few events on your calendar, and you know, and you said you're feeling pretty good. So talk us through what the upcoming events, starting with UTA, very, very soon. So you're coming back over to Australia.
Yep. So I wanted to come visit my family and, you know, have some duties to fulfill at home. And I thought, okay, well, you know, why don't I do an event whilst I'm there, and I'll kind of open my trail running season. So and I've never done UTA. I've seen it. I've always wanted to do it. So I signed up for that. I don't really know what to expect. I have hiked around the Blue Mountains, but it's fair to say I haven't run a bunch of those trails, which, you know, could be a disadvantage, but at least, you know, I'm coming in with the, I'm getting off the plane on Tuesday and I'm racing Friday. So I'll still reap some of those altitude benefits, hopefully.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'll be able to put them to use. You know, I have the benefits, but I've got to be able to achieve, you know, that high percentage of VO2 max. And just see how I go there and kind of use it as a bouncing board for world trail and mountain running. So I'm going to do the up there and then the up down. Again, I don't get too much time off work, so I'm flying in Tuesday and racing Wednesday. I will be tired, but, you know, the other piece of pieces of research around that are like, you know, you either come and acclimatize for 2 weeks before, or you fly in and race straight away. So I'm taking the latter of that and hoping to, you know, just do as well as I possibly can. I don't really have an idea of how I will do, and then up down. Yeah.
The that's wild. The I know that the well, the in the up, which in this case it is a vertical K, you start at 1,000 meters and it finishes at 2,000 meters above sea level. So that's still lower than where you are right now. And so I don't imagine that's going to be a I don't imagine the elevation or the altitude is going to be a major factor for you in that one. But let's hopefully you reap the benefits of your own of where you are now, you know, so that when you get there, because essentially 1,000 meters is like bloody sea level for you, isn't it? going down to 1,000 meters. And I've been looking over the vertical in particular. The elevation profile is interesting because the worst of the climbing is in the first half of the race. So it starts out pretty steep, but then it actually tapers off in the second half. And so from what I'd be thinking about how I'm going to pace that and thinking about how saving a little bit in the legs for the second half where you can actually open up a little bit more. Do you go into that length of detail? Like,
yeah, I mean, I feel like we train for that almost naturally as mountain runners. So like there's a run that I like to do here a lot of like many times a week because we in this kind of mud season, shoulder season, you can't go run the really high peaks yet. And you know, they're a little bit of a drive. So I run around here and there's a couple routes. This one, you climb. And then it's all down and it forces you to run fast. Yeah. The other workout that I'll do is I'll do like sets of kind of VO2 max style hills on trail and then finish off with a threshold run, tempo run. And that is to mimic, like, you know, you do a lot of climbing, now really throw down the hammer. I like to have like a second wind, I call it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
No, that's the kind of stuff that I approach it with. I imagine it's going to be a very fast field, particularly in the vertical. But then also the descending. Would you say you're a good descender? For the classic, like where you go up the mountain, then down the mountain? Are you a better climber or a better descender?
I'm a better climber for sure. Like I used to do better at cross country than I did at track, which is not testament to the downhill, but like I would I remember being young and like trying to come up with tactics, and I would try and pass runners in the cross country and not sound like I was breathing too heavy to psych them out, then run past them and start my breathing again. I love the hills. Downhill wise, look, I struggled in I think it was July last year. I went to Strandafjord in Norway. I hurt myself in that race pretty bad going down the hills because they weren't just hills. You were sliding on muddy, slick rock. There was seaweed on top of one of the peaks, which was fascinating to me. Like kelp. Because those mountains are coming basically sloping out and going off the ocean, and you're sliding down this mud. It was crazy. I'd never done that before. Whereas here, like a lot of the trails, there's some technicality up high because you're scrambling, but for the most part, very runnable. but I have really big feet, like size 11, and it doesn't help, and I'm quite tall. So right. I've really worked on my descending lately, trying to make sure I can keep up with the Europeans who are very nimble at downhills.
They are. I think, I mean, you've got to always be working on your weaknesses, but also you've got to capitalize on your strengths as much as possible. So you're tall. So I imagine you've got relatively long legs, and so you're able to take some long strides. So I guess on the real technical stuff, the real, like, where it's real rocky or whatever, that, do you find it harder being taller, or is it like, do you find that sort of terrain is a challenge being a taller athlete?
I find it a little tricky, and I think it's, you know, because I didn't grow up doing a lot of that stuff. I mean, the trails that I ran in Sydney and stuff are technical, but not super steep downhills. And I think my center of gravity is higher, but I'm learning to dance a little more. It helps for me to watch videos of others do technical downhill, or think of myself like a mountain bike, or like I'm on skis. Like I'm like, I am the mountain bike, and I look and pick a line and take the line. So it's like a mindset that I'm trying to have with that and use in training.
Yeah, no, it's that's a good point. Like I look at, you look at someone like Killian, who is, he's like my height. I'm a short ass. I've got the same build as Killian, except my lungs are not quite as big as his, and so I haven't got a VO2 max of 92 like him. But so he can. But I look at the way someone like that descends, and it is a dance. Like the arms are kind of flailing around as an offsetting the balance. You know, it's because you got to really just roll with it. It's not like running in a straight line where your arms have to be so efficient, but you're in this case, it's just, utilizing your arms so much, isn't it? And like UTA's has got quite a bit of technical stuff as well. The UTA, you're doing the 22 over at UTA.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And so that's like 80% of that is like single track and paths and stuff like that. So, and there are obviously people get worried because there's a lot of stairs in UTA, but it's still, there is runnable terrain. And so there's fast runnable terrain, and it's a lot of small ups and downs. I think with the 22, the biggest climb is at like halfway through the race, and come up out of it. Yeah. So not at the very end, at least. So, but it's lots of short ups and downs. I think that it'll be a very fast and competitive field, and definitely would be a good hit out for Worlds. And I think because it's like Australia's premier race, that's really exciting. Are you heading back to the US and then heading over to Austria in between races?
Yeah, just because I have I work a full-time job. That's just the reality of it. And it's my training ground. It's where Australia is home, but this is, you know, where I'm based right now, and try and get back into things for a couple weeks and then head over to Austria. And that's kind of going to be a 4 or 5 day trip because I have a few other races. I'm going to run as many of the Golden Trail National Series races as possible over here. Cool. Potentially be able to sneak into that top 30 and qualify for the race in Italy at the end of the year. We'll see about that. Just consistency, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've got a question about, like, what does success look like to you? I know for a lot of elite athletes, it's pretty black and white. It's like, you know, getting on the podium or something. But I think success can be measured in so many different ways. What are some of the different ways that you measure success, or is it just purely outcome focused?
Outcomes are nice, but outcomes are a product of consistency. And I find the most success happens, you know, I feel joy and I feel the most fulfilled when I'm able to be consistent and I'm able to take rest days and feel comfortable on my rest days. Like a lot of runners get really anxious on the rest days. Yeah. And I have really learned it's a thing about growing older too. I think when I was 17 and running, I'd be like, ah, don't want to take a rest day. You know, I want to go surfing with my family or mountain biking, whatever. But I've really learned to enjoy just being able to be consistent. I mean, I wasn't able to run really well from 2019 to 2020, like around 2022. I didn't do as well as I'd hoped. But as soon as I got those, you know, the injections and continue to manage my treatment well for this condition, I have been able to find consistency again. And I'm starting to see glimmers of hope, because there was a time where I could just run and I wouldn't feel any pain, and it just made me happy. Like, I'd listen to podcasts, I'd listen to music. I wasn't so in my head. Yeah. There's like I follow Steve Magnus and those guys who write a lot on mindset, yes, and sports psychology.
The best. Steve. I love Steve Magnus and Brad Stuhlberg. Yeah. Great guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they wrote something the other day that really resonated with me and kind of made me realize something about, you know, when you go on a walk and you always have your best ideas when you're not actually doing the work. Like, you'll just be, I don't know, out at the dog park throwing the ball for your dog and like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
like, great idea. Yep. I used to get that all the time when I was running. Like, I would just be in a flow state. I'd be coming up with my best ideas to apply to university or work or whatever I was doing at the time. And I lost that for a long time. There wasn't that. And now I'm finding that again. That is success to me, because I'm like, well, if you can stay injury free, you can be consistent, and this can happily integrate into, you know, the other responsibilities that come to life, you're already successful. And then whatever you put down on race day is probably the best that you could have done. And it should come, right? If you're a good athlete, that should all come naturally.
Absolutely. Oh, it's good. And I think it's a great way to approach running too, because you want to be able to do this. If your goal is to stay injury free for a long time, the results will come. But it also means that you get to enjoy the sport for much longer. You know, do you want to be doing this in 20, 30 years? I mean, even if you're not like a world beater, you still want to be doing it, don't you? Because you enjoy the sport, you know, you enjoy getting out in the mountains and just exploring, you know. So I think, but if you, how often have you ever found yourself in a really high spot that you've run to or whatever and think, I don't know, I do this a lot, and I go, I couldn't get here any other way other than under my own power. You know, my legs did this. My legs brought me up here, you know. You want to be able to do that, don't you, for a long time, you know.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's
there's nothing like it.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful sport. Now, you've I think it's a really Brad, anyone who's listening to the podcast, they probably know that I've mentioned those guys a few times, and I'll say it again, like, you've got to, they have a really healthy mindset towards success and just generally, and I really am a big fan of both of them. The book, Do Hard Things, I imagine, I don't know whether you've read Brad Stuhlberg's latest book. It's really good. I would highly recommend that one. It's basically the opposite of, it's a book about the opposite of the Dave Goggins mentality towards training, which I think a little bit of Dave Goggins every now and again is okay, but I think it can be toxic in large proportions. Yeah, I don't know how you feel about that, if you're a fan or not.
I put it into two categories. David Goggins is the thing that gets you out the door on a rainy, windy, miserable day where you don't have anyone to run with and you're sore from a workout. Brad Stuhlberg and Steve Magnus's stuff is the thing that helps you keep going and being consistent day in and day out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the real magic happens. Yeah, that's brilliant. No, really cool. I want to talk a bit about some of the, you've got a pretty packed trail running schedule this year. So you've got UTA, the World Mountain Running Championships, which are all very exciting. Then back in the States, you've got a bunch of stuff. You've got Broken Arrow, 26K, mm-hmm, and the Vertical K. And
yeah.
I just saw a video on Twitter. There's fresh snowfall there at the moment. I don't know if you've been. I follow some coach on there, and he posted a video of like it was just dumping down fresh snow, and it's like it's May. I don't know how much. Apparently, it's a bit of an unpredictable weather. I know you're used to a lot of snow, but it just seems like a weird time of year to be getting more snow.
It's like above average season everywhere. Mammoth in particular, yeah. That California Sierra area. A lot of snow. I'm sure there'll be some on course, but good thing the winter here is brutally cold and long, because I did a lot of my trail running on like groomed fat biking tracks in the winter.
Cool. So you can get out. So, yeah, that's wild. I couldn't the number of layers you must wear when you go out running, it must be insane. Like getting ready to go for a run must be quite a job. Do you have to layer up a fair bit?
Look, this is actually the coldest town in the lower 48. So there's mornings, plenty of them, which are not anymore, but in the depths of winter, -5 Fahrenheit and below. So if it's that cold, you do not train outside, because it's really bad for your respiratory system. So I wait till it's warmer and I'll go out then. If not, I'll Nordic ski or ski mountaineer, which is a hell of a workout. I feel like it's really hard to keep your heart rate low skinning up a resort from 2,800 meters plus. But you really have to layer. There's some days where the only thing that's showing is your eyes.
Yeah. Oh, it must be fun though. Like I know how I love when I go out running here in little old Adelaide in the middle of winter, and we might have a winter storm and it gets quite cold, you know, not on the same level. But I love running in weather. Like I love running in when the weather's just out of control. And I think there's a part of you that it's sort of like, it's a really nice feeling of just getting battered around. And I think it sort of hardens you up a little bit. Do you feel the same way?
I do feel the same way, but I have to say this winter has been very, very long. It only released us from its grip like 2 weeks ago. And there's a certain point when it's dumping down snow and it's April and you're like, oh, this is hard.
It's a long time.
It's a long winter. You have to. It'd be hard to live here and not be really into like a Nordic sport. You know, ski mountaineering, even downhill skiing, because it's basically road running. And that's not a bad thing. You can work on your speed, but it's not what I love. So it was hard.
Yeah. Wow. The ski mountaineering is good because it's not as impactful, is it, on the joints? So it is good. It's kind of a good cross train. Really, you hear a lot of very successful mountain runners that do it because you have no other choice, because there's nothing else that you can do when it's, you know, it's like the most logical thing. But it is great because you can get such a good workout, you know, it's such a good workout, isn't it?
It is. So, I don't know. There's actually nothing that quite kicks my ass like doing intervals on Skimo skis, so.
And you compete in Skimo as well and all that. Like, I don't know. I'm obviously coming from a place that has where it never snows. So, like, would you say that has been really a huge benefit to your running success?
I've only competed in that for one season, so it's kind of hard to tell. I was able to run a decently fast 5K in late February of this year. But whether that, you know, I think that's just a testament of being able to, you know, get all those core sessions down and execute it on race day. Like my coach once said, I've never seen someone be so nervous, but be able to execute a race so well. Cause like, I do get very anxious, not so much anymore, I think, but when I was younger, now I just don't have anyone, like I don't have my family, so I'm not showing my true anxiety to anyone.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, anxiety, it's almost like a necessary part of competing though, you know, don't you think? It's sort of like harnessing that for good rather than evil, you know, because I think that I liken it to say, like when people go, oh, I've got lactic acid in my legs, it's like, well, that's actually a fuel source. But you're just not—it's not being utilized properly. You're overdoing it. But like, I sort of anxiety is sort of, if you can harness that feeling of being anxious. And it can be almost like a superpower. I know it can be crippling. Like race anxiety can be absolutely crippling for some people, but hopefully you can get past that and use it.
Yeah, no, it's not. I wouldn't say it's at all crippling. It's something that, you know, I was super, super nervous in 2017 for the cross-country championships, but being nervous, my heart rate was up. I got off the line fast and I just ran as fast as I could and was able to keep that lead and win that race. And nice. So, yeah, I've been like, when I know I can, I tend to run from the front. But if I know the field's really stacked, I'll be a little more strategic.
Yeah, that's really cool. And and that's not, it's funny with the type of racing that you do. So we're sort of meandering a little bit, but because a lot of your racing is like short and hard, like the vertical K, for anyone who's even tried to run something like just where you run straight up a mountain, it's got to be one of the most horrifying disciplines, because there's no easy part to that race. You know, like it's sort of like, when you run, because I do a lot of longer stuff, you know, ultras and whatnot, and you can just ease into it, you know, you can sort of give yourself time to settle in. But that is just like, put your foot to the floor and get uncomfortable straight away.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you like that feeling when you're in it?
I'd say sometimes it turns into some, I don't know, is it like type 2, type 3 fun? But
yeah, I think, yeah.
At points you're like, holy crap. I mean, it goes by so fast, you don't actually have a lot of time to think about it. And like, that's why you see so many track runners and road runners who are really good at doing this kind of race, because of how short it is and how it's, you know, like how much power and speed for this short amount of time, you just put it all out there, like you're redlining, right? So
yeah,
there's no time to think. I don't really get in my head. I just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Just Nike it.
Just do it, yeah.
So I know that bloody Nike, they come up with like the best slogan, even though I don't really like the company.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is definitely a good slogan. But no, you've just, yeah, it's funny how we are, and this goes back to a bit what you're saying about, like what Brad and Steve talk about, like the whole, it's, you know, sometimes you've almost got to get out of your own way. You know, your own mind gets in the way, but you just got to let your body do what it knows how to do. And especially in a race like that, you've done the work. You've like, as the Americans say, often the hay is in the barn. And so you have to just let it go and see what, and, you know, if you think too much during the race, because it's over so quickly as well. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, here's something that resonated. Oh, sorry to interrupt.
Go. No, please.
I was like, so here's something that resonated with me that like, it still sticks around with me today. In 2018, I emailed Steve Monteghetti and I asked him if I met him at a Nike Zoom camp way back. He asked me, like, I asked him, oh, will you provide me with some mentorship? And for a short amount of time, we emailed back and forth. And it was before 2018 Australian cross country champs. And I told him how I was feeling before it. And he said, Lara, your legs do not know the difference between a hard workout and race. The only thing that knows that you're in a race right now is your mind. So your legs know exactly what to do because they don't know it's in a race. It's just biomechanics. It's just, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's so true. Like, for all they know, we could be doing another session with Run Crew at Centennial Park. So I took that with me. And that has really made an impact on how I think about racing, because it's just your mind that knows it's a race.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, he's, anyone's going to know, it's Moniz. I met Monteghetti a couple of times. I met him last year at a race here in South Australia. He came over. And he was the race ambassador for this small race called the Pitchy Richie Marathon. And I was hoping that I'd bump into him. And I actually was only doing the half marathon. And sure enough, he was doing the half marathon. And, you know, he's just he's 60 now. So he was 59 at the time. And I just walked up to him and said, hey, mate, it was right before the start. Had a chat, got a selfie together. And because it's an interesting half marathon, because the first sort of 14Ks is like this this real rolling hill sort of, but steadily going up into the Flinders Ranges. And then the last 7Ks is just basically, and it's all road, last 7Ks mm-hmm. is just this beautiful downhill. But it's hard because it's, you know, you have to go real hard. And I mean, look, him at 60 and I'm 43, you know, I'm not at all elite, never have been. But he was, I managed to run with him for the first K, I'll say that much. And then he, but that was him warming up. And then he just took off and he finished second to someone who was 40 years younger than him and only by a few seconds. So, like, he still ran a one, what did he run? He ran a 1:17 half on a hilly, half marathon, like at the age of 59. So he's, he certainly knows. And he said, and because everyone was like, oh, maybe he'll just run it as fun because he's the ambassador. But, and I love this about him as well. He said, as soon as he puts a bib on, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a race. Like, he just goes for it. And so, and I love that. He's got the animal in him, you know. He just, and he races really well. But so, no, that is good. Your legs don't know. It's just your brain. And so that's, it's a fun, that's what makes a sport so much fun. And you do a lot of these shorter, harder races where it is just like all go. But I've noticed you sort of towards the end of your season, like you've got quite a few. I mean, you're doing the Pikes Peak Ascent, which is a pretty well-known race, and that's a half.
Yeah.
I mean, have you done that before?
No, I haven't. I was meant to do it last year. I going through so many health issues, it was hard to – it's hard when you've had so much success to then line up kind of feeling like you're half of what you should be, and it's not because of an injury, it's just something that was out of your control. So I really wanted to get that under wraps, and I am getting there. I'm still not 100%. I think that I never will be 100%, but I'm gonna see how I can go with what I have.
You're in your mid-20s now.
Yeah
24. So, I mean, you've got lots of growth still naturally, despite your ankylosing spondylitis. I'm terrible at saying it. I think I got it pretty close. But you're still going to just get better anyway. I mean, like, just, you know, I'm 43. I'm faster than when I was 33, and so you know, like, you will just get naturally stronger over time. And you got to sort of think on that longer time scale as well. Like, and obviously, I know last year you did your first ultra?
Yep. Yeah, that was just fun.
Yeah. Is that somewhere where you headed? You want to head to the longer stuff when you get older? Like, a bit, you know, like, I know a lot of people, I mean, I always say, like, when you lose some of that top end speed, it's good to go into the longer stuff. Is that intriguing to you?
I'll potentially explore that. But I do have unfinished business on the track too. I'm realizing, thought that what I had was gone. Now, at one point I was on the all-time Australian fastest 5 and 10K list like that. I was like, oh my gosh, like I can do that. The standard now is amazingly high. Like, what the girls are doing in Australia and competing overseas is phenomenal. And so it's going to be very hard for me to potentially get back to that level, particularly with a focus on trails. But I'm wondering, like, more and more you see these crossover athletes, and I would consider myself a crossover athlete. I would like to be able to run, like, almost, you know, Olympic standard on the track for 5K and also be good at running up a mountain. That would be so cool. That would be success to me. You know, it's not about, like, the time or the podium, but it's like, hey, how well-rounded can I be? How can I prove that, hey, track runners can be trail runners too, and vice versa? You don't have to just run trails to be a trail runner or just run track to be a track runner. You can do both.
That's it. And they do complement each other to a degree. I mean, a lot of people don't, like, I love the challenge of running on the flat. Running flat has always been a weakness for me, but I think I enjoy doing it because I can see growth every time I go out and run flat. But I think, you know, you've got the likes of, like, Jessica Hull now, and who are just running these ridiculous times over, like, 5K I think you've given a red hot go. I've lost my train of thought. I had a question related to that, but we'll just move forward, and then if that comes back to me, that question, I'll ask it. You're looking at later on in the season. I've just clicked away. I have ruined my own flow. Isn't that disappointing? I got it all inside my own head. But no, you're doing the Moab half as well. Is that a hard race?
That race won't be till November. Got a few ones in between then, yeah, in regards to the national series. But that race, I would say, is like, it's fast. You want to be fast. I didn't have such a good race last year. Like, I won it, but I would have got the course record, I believe, but I kind of have been going through weird abdominal cramps. Like, I inject my Humira, like, it's a medication for what I have. It's into the abdominal wall and I didn't alternate the side of injection. So I end up cramping my abdomen from that site of injection pretty bad. And my muscles have taken a long time to calm down, and now they have. I would like to. I know I can run that course faster. I'm really excited to get back out there. It's like Red Rock at Moab, right? You've got that slick rock. You've got sections of mud, dirt, sand. It's not super birdy. It's just all terrain, and I like that a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. And like you say, it's not until November, so the weather is, I don't know what it's like at that time of year in Utah. Is it going to be is it not as cold as where you are? So obviously.
No.
Yeah. So that's very cool. And also, yeah, I missed out the Mammoth Trail Fest. Yeah, you got like loads on. And I imagine that there might be other things coming up in between, shorter stuff. And so you've just got to, like, what sort of mileage do you, I'm not going to delve, I don't want to delve too deeply into the specifics of your training, but like, now that the warmer weather is coming to you guys over there, like, what sort of mileage are you hoping to run, like, on average, you know?
Yeah, look, I tend to, everything on my program is based off time, so the mileage ends up being what it's going to be, you know, after I've done those runs and however long the workouts are. But it's tending to fall right now around, like, 110K a week if you were to like average out the weeks, minus the the treadmill accident week. So, you know, it's got,
yeah,
it's like, because you've got the climbing aspect and the technical terrain aspect, it's looking at like 10 hours a week at the moment, with the occasional swim.
And you're working full time, to fit 10 hours in is pretty impressive. How do you would you want to do more than that, or do you feel like that's a good amount for you? Like, if you had no other responsibilities, would you continue? Would you up your training? Like, what do you think, that's an adequate amount, or would you put in more cross training?
Right, that's a good question. You know, I do think that there's the elusive, you know, over here especially, one, I want to run 100 miles a week. Your legs do not know what that number means. Your legs know what load and adaptation and recovery means, right? You know, so it's not about that for me. I think that I would only run more if it would favor good adaptation, but I will only run to the point where it's not taking away from my recovery. You know, we'll have overload weeks, but I'm not going to go and consistently run super high mileage and put myself on red line with injury. I've actually running those cross champs and winning and running all the races that I've won, I've run off probably what someone would consider low mileage. Right now I'm running like high mileage for me, but that's because I never really was able to establish a super high mileage for myself with being, you know, having the autoimmune condition impact my life for so long. So, I think that some of my long runs get extended, but I also training to the event. I'm training for sub ultra, you know, half marathon races with set amount of climbing and technicality. And if I can tailor a program that meets the demand requirements and the rest of the time allows me to recover, that's going to be ideal for that. I'm not going to like do more than I need to for it.
Yeah, brilliant. No, and it's all about the sweet spot, isn't it? It's finding that, and it's different for different athletes, obviously. But I do think that there's a weird fix. I mean, high mileage matters to a degree, but if it comes at the cost of your health, and if you can see that you're not progressing when you get to huge numbers, there's no point, you know. And I think in 2020, when there was nothing else to do, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Calendar Club Challenge. Have you heard of that before?
No, what's that?
It's just literally, because there are no races or anything. So I did it in kilometers, and you run 1 kilometer for whatever day of the week it is. So if it's the first of the month, you run 1K. Second of the month, 2Ks and 3Ks. And then you go on until the end of the month. And so it starts out the first couple of weeks super easy. And so I was just doing like a bit of strength work to complement it during that first sort of 2 weeks. And then you get right up there towards the the last week of the month, I did 189 kilometers, and which was the biggest week I've ever done. And it was a really interesting experiment. Like, it was a good challenge because I'm like, what else am I going to do at the moment? But getting to the end of the month was really hard, you know. And when you've done like a 26K run, and then you've got to go and do a 27K run the next day, and then a 28K run, you know, it got hard. I highly recommend, I mean, there's some people that do it in miles, which is like, that's a whole nother level, you know? So, but yeah, just realizing where my sweet spot was definitely not at 189 kilometers, you know, like that felt like too much. I didn't get injured, but I had to have a few days off after that. And, it was a really good point to see where the breaking point was, but it also made me realize how much I value rest days as well. So I will have a rest day like once a week, and that's
important.
Oh, so important, and for my longevity as well. I want to just keep doing this and stay close to where I am now, ability wise and race fitness wise. I just want to maintain this, and so if that means I have to have a day or two off, like last week I had a few days off because I was a bit unwell, as you know, and I'm glad I did, because I think I would have prolonged my illness. And so, but we do have this mentality of you've got to keep grinding forward, and you just end up grinding yourself into the ground. You don't want to do that. And especially like someone, and you don't know, like you had an underlying health condition that you weren't even aware of. And you know, and so that it's good that you know these things now, you know? So, yeah, exactly. It's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, the rest period's like the time when you recover. How can you recover if you just keep stressing, right? So big fan of the rest day.
I came up with an analogy the other day, which I think is my favorite one I've done. I like to come up with analogies for training, but this is tell me what you think of this one. So training is like putting on layers of paint when you're painting a wall, right? And so you do a layer. And so if you do lots of layers of paint, you end up with a nice finish. But the thing is, the recovery is that you'll allow the paint to dry. Sometimes it might take 24 hours or more, you know. So let the paint dry before you do your next layer. And that's how I sort of approach training now. Make sure the paint let the paint dry. I remember what I was going to say a few minutes ago where I lost my train of thought. One of your, I'm going to say, neighbours is in the same state as you. You know Sage Cannaday. He lives in, I think he lives in Boulder. I know it's not exactly neighbours. His motto is any surface, any distance, which is a lot like what you're looking at, you know, running on track, running on road, running on trail, you know. So that I think it's the key to longevity in the sport, any surface, any distance. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, to run fast, you've got to know how to run fast.
Bingo. I say it a lot. I love that. Yeah, that's got to get a t-shirt. Sometimes you got to run fast if you want to run fast. Yeah.
Because, I've had comments sometimes, like, Gary will be like, oh, you're doing a lot of, like, fast running, it's just a lot of climbing and a lot of trails. Like, you might want to put some fast running in there. I think that was my downfall last year, because now that I'm fast, I am able to resonate that with, you know, as he says, anywhere, any surface. And exactly. It's just the holistic view of fitness and applying that, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, if we look at the Australian mountain running team, and that is heading over to Austria next month, which is pretty crazy. A lot of those athletes that are heading in have got incredibly good flat ground speed, but you know what I mean? Like, so I know within the men's field, you've got guys like Nathan Pearce, who's in a really fast, he's doing the vertical K and the up down as well, I believe. And, you know, he runs blisteringly fast 5K on the track. And I know for a fact that that's what they're looking at, people who can run fast, because it's the foundation that a lot of things come off, you know. Endurance is far more trainable than speed, unfortunately. I mean, speed is trainable. And I mean, you could probably have a really long debate about what's more trainable than others. But, you know, I do think, I think there's a lot of amateur athletes out there who don't do enough speed and they don't do it at the right time either. But then, you know, so I think there is this within the amateur community, there's this, because everyone got on to the zone two bus and was like, yeah, zone two, which is great in a lot of ways. But sometimes, as we said, you got to run fast. And so, I think you look at the team, yeah, it's a pretty wild team that you've got going over. I don't know. You feel the same way? Like, have you seen that? I mean, obviously where you live in Colorado generally, it's like the mecca of trail running in the world. Like, it's the there's just so much to do over right on your doorstep. So
here in Chamonix, right?
True, Chamonix. But do you, like, when you go to races and that, you're basically rubbing shoulders with the best in the world, and that's probably a big part of the reason why you're there, is, you know, am I right? So, you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but basically, you know, that's what's good about Colorado. You're right there, you got all the good runners. And and they're all running. And I think what I'm getting at is the running within the community, you're going to push each other up, you know? So, like, and I think going forward, you have, if we look at Australia and the mountain running, the Australian mountain running team is going to become they're going to be looking more and more at flat running speed when they choose the teams. I'll tell you that much. Like, I think that's a fundamental that, and I would not be surprised if they start looking at, obviously if they're going to choose someone for a VK, they want to choose someone who can run very, very fast, but you need to have some uphill speed, you know. But yeah, I don't know where the crossover point is though. If you know what I mean, like someone who might be a 15 minute 5K runner, you know, or, you know, like there's got to be someone who because there's a biomechanic loss. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when you're running uphill, you are using your muscles a little differently. Have you ever seen that? Like people where that speed hasn't translated to the hills to running, just because VK is just straight up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because like here, the track runners kind of stay on the track and the trail runners stay on the trail.
Yeah,
It's hard to tell. Like a good example of someone who's really fast on the track and really good on the trail, and you know, she just won the US Mountain Championships, is Grayson Murphy. Like,
yes,
prime example. The races aren't quite long enough for it to you know, those external factors, like with ultra marathons, you're dealing with like nutrition and technicality over a long time, lots of climbing. It's when those factors come in, things kind of can change a bit. Like I even in sub ultras, you know, those races that are taking you 2 hours plus, you have to bring in nutrition, you have to bring in other things, and maybe that changes the story a little bit if you haven't practiced with that stuff. But it's like, you, for me, I'm finding a balance. I train every part of the system, and that involves flat running, that involves steep running, that involves gradual running, because the more well-rounded I make myself, I feel like the more you'll hit a flat section of the trail. It's like, right, imagine you're in a track and just hit it. And then when you hit the steep, I'm pulling from different resources that I've not only trained physically, but I've trained mentally.
Yeah, excellent. And I think that's the key. And I just was, speaking of nutrition, what are you, for a race like the VK, would there be, I mean, I know you're not going to take any nutrition during a race of that length because it's so short, but in the lead up to it, would you have like even just like a gel? This is just out of interest. You know, do you fuel a little bit beforehand, or do you just go running as light as possible?
Oh, I'm not. I eat a bowl of oats with I don't know. Maybe don't take this literally. It's not Sustagen. That stuff I had in Australia, that sports stuff. We have a version of it over here, which tastes a lot nicer. I put a scoop of that in with oats, and we'll eat that 45 minutes before every run. Then don't have stomach issues. I perform better, and I can, often not need something until the later stages. So I will fuel an hour before and do it.
Yeah.
And if I feel like I really need something, I'll just have a honey stinger gels or whatever. I honestly haven't been super on top of having a specific brand this year. I literally just go to the supermarket and I'm like, that'll work. Today I ran with a banana.
I do that. Nature's gel.
apple puree. I buy the baby food, little Ziploc bags of cereal. I just use what I have in my house.
No, and that's okay, because it gets expensive when you're constantly buying the brand name. I enjoy Spring Energy gels and stuff, but seriously, they're quite expensive, especially to get here now. And baby food has a very similar, I'll go out and take baby food with me. And that's, I call it my budget, sort of a budget version of Spring Energy. It's good. But what about the longer races, when you're getting up to half marathon distance, are you going to say for Pikes Peak ascent, where that's going to be, I don't know how long that'll take you. What, 90 minutes?
Two hours.
Yeah, no, 90 minutes. It's extreme. So let's say it takes about 2 hours or so.
Longer than that. I mean, the top guys are doing it in just over that. So, it'll be longer than that. And I would want the same these days, especially, at altitude and potentially in some heat. You'd want to be taking maybe 300 calories an hour. I'll be taking the 250 calorie Spring Energy gels or the Awesome Sauce. Yeah. Mix that with a bit of electrolytes. We've got to practice that kind of stuff. I do have time for that. I do practice it now, but I practice it with more of the home ingredients. I feel like a banana and Cheerios cereal is more risky than something formulated for sport. So I'm testing it.
What, banana? Oh, really? They're more dangerous, did you say?
I think so. I think those gels are formulated. Whereas I'm just grabbing random things. I'm like, oh, I didn't buy any gels today. There's a banana. There's some cereal. Yeah. What can I make?
No, it's but it's good to experiment. And if you're going to experiment, do it on your training runs. You know, obviously you're not going to just experiment in a race. You get to know what works. You know, when doing it that way, I'll take a banana probably 3 or 4 times a week. That'll be my alternative, because it's a hell of a lot cheaper than buying gels all the time. And I'll eat one, just early on in my run, and that will sustain me for the rest of the run. But it's fascinating. And so UTA, you've got, because that's 22, and there'll be aid stations, and it'll be pretty, I want to see you absolutely gunning it. Just, I think you can. You've got, it's the furthest steps that you've got to go up, by the way, at 6.7 kilometers into the race, which is, you've heard of the furthest steps.
I heard of it. There's a hell of a lot of steps, but I'm actually looking forward to it. I want that to be the point where I put time on the race. Like I start to
It's your climb. Yeah. And then basically after halfway, it is literally just undulations and a few short ups and downs. That there's nothing extreme in terms of big climbs. It actually looks like the trails are rocky and technical, and the stairs are irregular in a lot of parts. But I think for the most part, it gets some pretty fast times on there. So your flat ground speed is going to come in really handy. And the fact that you are, I mean, the race starts and finishes at 950 meters above sea level. So it's pretty low down. And then so I'm just giving you, it's like I'm giving you a pep talk. I'm not, because I know you know what you're doing. Yeah. But I find it fascinating to see how someone of your caliber is going to approach a race like this. And I think it would be, it's going to be an awesome training stimulus going into the next big one in Austria, the Worlds, because I think it's longer, it's above the distance, over distance, but like there's nothing as, I mean, it's a big, and it's a pretty big stage running at UTA, even over the 22. So, but you've even got to carry mandatory gear. And that was a question I wanted to ask you. At the Worlds, do they require mandatory gear? Because I don't imagine they would with an elite race.
Oh, not. I don't believe it's anything significant for that kind of distance. At World Sky Running, there was more. It really just depends on the race. Like, I think it's actually a good thing. Like, we're taking care of our runners, and you know, you got to get out and practice wearing that extra weight as well. So.
Yeah, just also, this is going to be really nice for you. The weather in the Blue Mountains is going to be around about 18 degrees, partly cloudy in when you arrive, when you run. So that's going to be pretty quite pleasant. It might actually feel a bit hot for you with your because you've got your mountain blood. So I don't know how that feels. What's the temperature there today?
Today, it was in Fahrenheit, but I don't want to say that. Let me look is right now. It's 19 and it feels really hot outside. So that's warm to me.
You're going to have to go and do some heat acclimatization then. It's fascinating. I think that you'll be fine, but it's a short race. But really fascinating with the run up to with the next few months. And I think, the other question I wanted to ask you, are you currently sponsored?
I have a partnership with Dynafit, but it's not a sponsorship. That's just more of an ambassadorship. Still waiting on confirmation of that. I just kind of take any support that I can get right now. But I like to think that my full-time job and incentives with that, I take a portion of my paycheck every month and I call up the athlete fund and I sponsor myself.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And look, I think, I like to amplify anyone who is out there doing big things such as yourself. And so, sponsors get on board and, you know, throw a pair of shoes or something or at these Australian athletes. And for a lot of people who don't know, it's an entirely going to the World Championships is a self-funded endeavor, which is bloody expensive, you know. And so I think it's a shame. I think hopefully in a couple of years there'll be more funding allocated from Athletics Australia. But as it stands at the moment, we don't have that. So come on, sponsors, get on board and and approach these athletes. And so people. So people can follow you on Instagram and to look at what you're doing over the next few months, because it's pretty wild, wild few months for you.
I'm not as good as I have been in the past on my Instagram, just because I'm busy with life, but I try and post things often but I'm not like, oh, I need to post every day and get a bunch of followers. I don't have time for that right now.
You're too busy doing the thing. So I get it. But you do have a good, your larahamilton.com, your website, you've got a pretty, I meant to mention that earlier. I I really like some of your things that you've written on your blog about, like, mental skills and lots of other stuff. So I think people should have a look at that. Check out all the stuff that you have been posting on there. And are there any other platforms, or is that's pretty much it? You're just too busy running and kicking ass?
Most active, yeah, on Instagram. I tend to post a lot of stories. Like today I ran up Signal Peak, which is just a local backyard one, and posted that up there. And then making articles on my website. I have like my own side business that just became profitable, kind of, where I realized Strava, because I'm a marketing professional, that's my job right now, don't allow small businesses, to have a presence that brings in growth for their brand. So I had like Stratton Mountain School contact me, a couple other places, like a pet food company, and they all want to run challenges, but they can't afford Strava's minimum investment to have a sponsored challenge. So I like figured out kind of back-end ways of doing that and being able to build that presence. So I have like consulting people on how to do that, what methods they can use. It's nothing major, but it's like I've been able to use my website to build that.
That's really interesting. No, I definitely, we'll have to have a look. That's something I'm fascinated with. I really like that some of the changes that Strava have made, I see what you mean from a business perspective. I feel like there's a lot more than they could do. So that's we can learn about that on your website as well.
I have like a Strava section. People email me questions all the time about how they can start a challenge, but not pay for it. And there are ways, like you have limitations. And so I just post these articles based on the questions that I've been asked.
Yeah. Excellent. All right then. Well, I look forward to it, and I hope that you can write some stuff about your races in the next, because I love a good race report. Do you ever write race reports? I don't, or a little bit. I just think we'll be keeping our eye on you, and I'll share all that this across. I'll put all your people links to your website in the show notes, and so people can find you, follow you, and cheer you on.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's my pleasure. And thanks for a nice rambling chat about all things running. And I'm sure we could talk about more, but perhaps we can touch base again later on in your season and see how you're going. I wanted to say, stay away from treadmills for a while.
I hate them. Honestly, I had a bad relationship with them. And I was like, I'll give it another shot. I'll go and do the study, because I wanted to know, how I was progressing that physiological number. And I fell off the treadmill.
Yeah, we weren't recording when you mentioned that. So you fell off the treadmill and absolutely nailed yourself. And so that sucks.
Yeah, it's the worst accident to have, because I was going so well fitness wise, and I didn't, I was in a lot of pain. Like you got caught on kind of the metal bar, which would hold like a harness for a roller skier. My leg got caught there, twisted me, got road rash on my body, and then it spat me out the other side. I was just like curled up in the fetal position on the floor, in a lot of shock. Because I was like, oh my gosh, treadmills are dangerous.
They're supposed to be safer. They're supposed to, people take run on the treadmill so they're not running out in the dangerous wide world. But take me into the mountains any day of the week over they're not actually called treadmills. They should just rename them dreadmills, because they're dreadful.
Well, when you fall mountain running, you hit the ground and you don't keep moving. You fall on a treadmill, it's going to send you flying out the pack.
You poor thing. The only thing that would make it better is if someone was filming you. Was anyone filming you when it happened?
I'd have to ask if there's a security camera, because I have a lot of them over here in the US, like filming that.
Yeah. You could monetize that, people love a treadmill fail. You pop that on YouTube and before you know it, you'll have a million views.
Yep. The funniest home videos.
Yeah. That's right. No, that's terrible. Did you actually, were you able to get the data that was required for the VO2 max test? Because you said you were near, you were running quite fast at the time. Did you get the data?
No, I don't know how much, I was about to say data, becoming Americanized, how much data I got, because we were on stage 5 and you got stage 6. And yeah, he never really communicated that with me. I think we were all in shock. Because apparently it's the second time it's happened. But it's rare, obviously. And I kind of felt like an idiot because I was like, how did I do that? But I did it. So
they are dangerous. I told you before we were recording, I did a VO2 max test, and I didn't mention this, but my hand hit the bar at the front and I tore my finger open when it wasn't enough to stop me running, but it wasn't until afterwards, and I had all this blood running down my hand, and it was just like, just took a nick, and because they're dangerous. They're super dangerous. And that was on a treadmill that was wider and longer than the standard treadmill. And I thought, you know, so yeah, I can imagine how scary that would have been, falling off a treadmill.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that you that's the only fall you get this season, and that you just have a kick-ass season, and you run really well at UTA. I'll be watching you, and I'll be watching the live stream when you guys go over to Austria, which I'm very excited about. So say hello to I'll be saying hello to everyone I can between now and then, and good luck.
Thank you so much. Yeah, very excited.
A pleasure. Well, we will farewell the listeners here.